Hey, I'm Tracy Burns. I'm a financial advisor with UBS. This podcast is called Five Things. So you're going to learn five things and then you're going to move the heck on. We are busy. I get it. You have things to do. So let's just get to the point. I'm on a mission to help women and empower them financially, especially those going through divorce or transition or a super soft spot for female founders and entrepreneurs and, of course, small businesses. And then there's that pesky wage gap. I have three young adult kids. Two of them are women, so I have a personal interest in trying to close that. So before we get to today's topic, I encourage you to listen to our previous podcast. We did five things every business should be thinking about right now. Five things financially savvy parents can teach their kids. Five ways to find a perfect board seat. Most recently, we did five things to do right now to clean up your financial life. And so with that, I want you to follow up on that and give you some actionable things to do year end. So not shockingly, I called in the big guns. And I have a friend, Justin Waring, here with us right now. He is no doubt one of my first calls when I'm trying to get a sense of what's going on in the world. He's a senior total wealth strategist with the Chief Investment Office here at UBS. He's a certified financial planner, professional. He writes research, advises investors in financial planning, behavioral finance, which is a whole nother topic. Justin, we might have to do it at a later date. Portfolio management, all the things. And I just found out recently that Justin grew up in the Netherlands. So in the interest of keeping us on track, and that also is fodder for another day, Justin, I want to dive in to a piece that you put together recently. This great report on things people could do and basically how they can keep track and help save their hard-earned money that they've earned all year long. So first of all, Justin, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Tracy.
So I've always said, Justin's my first call. You have such a good sense of what's going on in the world. And this report, I thought, was just a perfect example of that because these are actionable things people could do. So we're going to dive right in. The first thing you said is to enhance your tax diversification. And taxes are everywhere these days. They're always topical conversation. Tax rates are changing. I mean, do we know that for a fact or do we just presume that's going to happen?
Well, when we look at the deficit of the U.S. government and the debt that we have outstanding, it's pretty clear that taxes are going to be part of the solution in the long run. And especially for higher income earners, it's likely that they're going to have a target on their back in terms of higher taxes.
Okay, so with that, what should people be thinking about as far as saving on the tax front?
So in our view, the best way is to protect yourself against possible changes to the tax code, because we don't know exactly what's going to change, is to diversify your investments across multiple tax types. So you may have access to save in a traditional IRA, a Roth IRA, or in a taxable account. Those three main types of tax treatment can help you protect against the risk that taxes go higher, the risk that taxes go lower, the risk that they change the way that capital gains taxes are treated, all these different things. So the most important thing is to build a portfolio that's spread across those three types, because when you have those three assets and those three pools of assets in retirement, it helps you to fund your retirement spending on managing how much taxable income you actually recognize. And that can help you keep out of a higher tax bracket in the future. And one item that people could be doing this year to enhance their tax diversification is, if you're in your working years, you may want to direct your savings into account types that are going to give you the highest after-tax growth potential and the account types that maybe you have under-allocated to in the past.
So we don't hear this very often where people talk about tax diversification. I actually love that we're saying this right now, because we talk about portfolio diversification and all these other things, but we don't talk about tax diversification. So you're basically saying right out of the gate, max out whatever retirement plan you can.
Oh, absolutely. And in doing so, try to make sure that you were building towards a balanced portfolio in retirement. We have something that we publish every year called the Savings Waterfall, and it's a worksheet that working age Americans can take a look at. It will remind you about how much the limit you can contribute to each different account type. And it goes across all the different account types, IRAs, 401ks, health savings accounts, 529 accounts, et cetera, and helps you identify where is the priority, how much can I put into each of these types.
Now, yes,
getting your 401k match is like a huge priority because it's 100% return immediately.
And it's free money. And I'll make sure I put a link to that savings waterfall because it's an awesome piece. You had also mentioned a Roth conversion. So what are we seeing people doing with those these days? Because that was something we heard about a bunch of years ago.
Yeah, I think it's something that is still a priority, but it's one of these things that, you know, is especially valuable if you're in your early retirement years. When your salary goes away, you suddenly become a low income taxpayer. And between the beginning of your retirement and when you're required to take minimum distributions from your IRA, that forces you into a higher tax bracket, those years in between, which we call the gap years, these are an opportunity, especially for you to do Roth conversions, which is essentially taking money out of a traditional IRA, getting taxed on it, and putting it into a Roth IRA, which is going to grow tax exempt from that point on. Roth conversions, doing a little bit at a time, can help you to rebalance the amount of wealth that you have in those three tax types that I mentioned before. Especially because we think the taxes are going to go higher at the end of next year if Congress doesn't act, because the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act are going to sunset at the end of 2025. And so this year and next year especially may be a window of opportunity for Roth conversions. Sorry to step on you there.
Never. No. You should talk. I shouldn't. And people should absolutely speak to their accountants about all this. So let's move on to number two. Accelerate this lifetime giving. Now, this sounds like it's strictly for the wealthy, but it is something people should just be aware of, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that if you're aiming to retire comfortably and you want to avoid the risk of outliving your wealth, you know, these days with the cost of living being so high, that may require you to save several million dollars. And if you're lucky and you get a good string of returns throughout your retirement, it is certainly possible you could leave $5, $10 million to your heirs. It's not outside the realm of possibility, even for Americans of modest means.
Right.
And so while today an individual can give away $13.6 million and together with their spouse can give away $27.2 million without being subject to the estate tax, at the end of next year, unless Congress extends this, those lifetime exemptions are going to drop down to $6.5 or $7 million per person. And that's going to raise the estate tax as an issue for a lot of Americans who haven't ever had to think about it.
And right.
Maybe never thought that they would have to think.
Exactly. And I always think about farmers in particular, because the values of their farms is generally up there. Does it matter at the end of the day, Justin, who wins? Like, is one party planning? And does it matter, I guess, what the political parties are at the end of the day?
I think that when Congress takes up the expiring tax cuts next year after the election, it's likely to either be a Republican administration with modest majorities in both houses of Congress or a Democratic presidency with Kamala Harris presiding over a divided government. In either case, the congressional majority is going to be very thin, or there's going to be an outright division between the House and the Senate. And that's going to make it very difficult for them to agree to anything. And as a result, there is a real risk that a lot of these expiring tax cuts are going to expire just because there's no real agreement. There's no political appetite right now to take on a bunch of extra deficits in order to just extend all of them. And the two parties don't agree on which tax cuts should be extended and
which
tax cuts should expire.
So it's really important for people to take the bull by the horns here and work on this themselves and think about it. Basically, don't rely on DC to make decisions for you. Which brings me to your third point, which is to give to others and not the IRS. And I kind of love that, because the IRS is not a charitable organization and should not be treated as one.
Yeah, we always like to say you can spend the money yourself, you can give it to your family, or you can give it to the government, or you can give it to charity. You know, those are your options, and you can choose your preferences there. Charitable contributions can not only help your community and the causes that you care about, but also can help reduce your tax burden. And so one strategy that many families are using, especially in their 70s, is called a qualified charitable distribution, which is if you have to take the required minimum distribution from your IRA and you don't need to spend the money and you want to give to charity, you can take $105,000 for each IRA in your family. And instead of making a taxable distribution, you can make a tax deductible distribution and therefore not need to pay taxes on that portion of your IRA distribution.
Yeah, and that's brilliant and beautiful all at the same time, right? You're saving tax and you're also helping charities. And I would also encourage people just to make sure you save all your receipts. And don't forget even little things like when you make the casserole to bring to church, the ingredients could be deductible. So keep track of all your receipts and stuff, because it'll help you as it is also helping church.
I would also say just on that point that right now the standard deduction for most taxpayers is very high, and it raises the bar for making it worthwhile to do itemized deductions. And so if you do want to have enough gifting to charity to qualify for an itemized deduction, or make it more worthwhile to do an itemized deduction than to take the standard deduction, it may make sense for you to bundle multiple years of gifts into a single tax year, such as this year. And if you don't want to give all that to charity at once, if you want it to continue to grow between now and when you want to make a gift, or if you want to parcel out those gifts over many years, you could use a donor advised fund. And this is something that is a charitable vehicle where you can invest the assets after they've been gifted. You get your upfront tax deduction, but then they grow tax-free between the time that you fund the donor advised fund and when you actually make the distributions to individual charities. So that's another option for families who are looking to make an impact on their society.
It's a great option, actually, too, because you don't have to be a multimillionaire to have a donor advised fund. It's actually a minimal amount of money to start one. And then to your point, you can determine what years you want to make the donations and keep the deduction as one big pile, so to speak. That's a great tip. Moving on to harvesting capital losses, and I find this interesting. You and I were talking about this. It's tough to find losses out there. We have been very lucky in 2024. As of this recording, October 17th, both the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ are up over 22%. So are we hoping there's volatility towards the end of the year to take advantage of this? How do you do that then if many people are fortunate enough to see their portfolios go up this year?
I think this is a good year just to demonstrate how important it is to have a loss harvesting approach that looks for opportunities throughout the year. It's a good idea potentially to hire a portfolio manager that can take advantage of every loss harvesting opportunity as it occurs throughout the year. There are some individual stocks, some bonds that are down this year. If you've been adding to your portfolio or reinvesting income, you would have been buying throughout the year, and that gives you more opportunities to have a tax loss from a specific reinvestment period that happened mid-year, for example. We hit an all-time high in July, and then the market traded down for a couple months before reaching a new all-time high a couple weeks ago. And so there will be many opportunities throughout the year. And it's, I think, important for us to find a strategy that tries to harvest those losses and, of course, reinvest into something comparable, but that doesn't qualify for the wash sale rule according to the IRS, so that we are getting the tax advantage of those capital losses that help to reduce our capital gains taxes this year, helps to keep the dollars you would have given the IRS growing in your account. And then also potentially, the more and more we use this strategy, you may be able to avoid capital gains taxes altogether if you're able to defer capital gains through the end of your life and get a step up in cost basis when you pass assets to the next generation.
Yeah. And you said a ton of great things there. So I'm going to back up on the wash sale rule just so people know, if you sell a stock at a loss, you have to wait at least 30 days before you can buy it back. The IRS doesn't want you to sell a stock at a loss, buy it the next day, and be able to take that loss on your tax return. So they're being a little greedy, I get it, but you have to hit fog rules. And this notion of this step up in basis is kind of genius too, because you can at this point still, I know there's a lot of talk of getting rid of that step up, but you can give away stock that is at current market value. So if you bought it for argument's sake at $5 and now it's at 50, your kid is getting it at 50. And that, granted, you have to have passed, which is terrible, but there are things that people could do. So that I love what you said, though, Justin, about thinking about this all year. We often talk about tax loss harvesting at the end of the year. It's actually something we should be talking about all year long.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And the last thing that I wanted to point to, because you have been reporting on this for so long now, too, is the Secure 2.0 Act. And I have to admit, I did not realize that it actually stood for Hold on, I'm going to read this because people are going to think I'm crazy. Setting every community up for retirement enhancement. Therein lies the secure part. And she acted. She asked me. It was enacted again December 29th, 2022. So this is the 2.0. So what do we need to know about that, if anything, going forward?
Well, there's lots of little changes that make retirement a bit easier. So, for example, they've raised the age at which you have to take RMDs. I would say that, I believe it's Ronald Reagan said, the beware government saying that they're here to help, to paraphrase him. Whenever the government gives you a bit of a tax benefit or gives you a bit more flexibility, you have to think, is this actually going to make it better for me? And when it comes to extended increase in the age of RMDs, what Congress is trying to do is make you take more of your IRA distributions in fewer years, which then, of course, means that you get pushed into a higher tax bracket. So this is another reason to think of Roth conversions to spread that taxable income out over more years. So if you were born in 1960 or later, the new RMD age is going to be age 75. That's the point at which you need to start making taxable distributions from your accounts. But like I said earlier, between the date that you retire and when RMDs begin is a prime period during which to execute partial Roth conversions. Another change in the Secure 2.0 is that from now on, we're going to have cost of living adjustments for qualified charitable distributions, as well as the catch-up limit for IRAs. So if you're 50 years or older, you can contribute an extra $1,000 to an IRA. That number will be going up with inflation every year. So that's a pretty nice boost to
the
amount of wealth you can sock away for the future. And then the last thing I would mention is if you're between the ages of 60 and 63, their employers are going to have the option to allow you to have an even higher catch-up contribution limit for your 401k, 403b, or 457b plans. So that will increase from $7,500 this year to $10,000 next year. That'll be an additional catch-up contribution for people between the ages of 60 and 63.
This is all amazing, and I wonder how many people actually take advantage of it, because it does sound like a lot of money.
Right, exactly. And but especially for our seniors, many of them are out there right now living on a budget. Plus, then, as you mentioned, inflation, when you're living on a fixed income, is really tough to get people out there to stock away more. Sounds a little daunting, I think, to a lot of people right now.
Yeah, that's right. The good news is that the government does allow us to do tax, pre-tax contributions to our accounts. That reduces the cost effectively a little bit in terms of how much spending we have to cut today to support spending in retirement. And when we look across all of the different account types you could contribute to, we estimate even boost the amount of wealth that you have available to you for retirement spending by over 20% if you use the many account types that are available to you in a smart way.
Wow, that's amazing. So I'm going to make sure I link all this stuff. Justin, you had mentioned that people should go to ubs.com/retirement guidebook, all one word. Be sure to check that out because there's a lot of that stuff here. And if there's anything else that you think of, I'll make sure I link to this as well. Cannot thank you enough for sharing all your insight. You're like a wealth of knowledge. I'm pretty sure people understand now why you're my first call when I'm trying to figure out what's happening in the world.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the partnership, and thanks for having me.
Oh, it is our pleasure. Thank you so much.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.